3. This is a public affairs show called Books and Ideas. I am DJ Safikar. We're broadcasting not far from where the village of Putatoy once stood, populated by Patwin Native Americans. Today we're finishing Tolstoy and the Purple Chair, My Year of Magical Reading by Nina Sankovic. This book is about a woman who tries to deal with the loss of her sister by finding consolation and wisdom in books. She commits herself to intensely reading every day for a year and writing about it in her blog. It is about how to use books as therapy for grief and depression. It's also about how we recover and process our memories. This is the fifth and final show about this book. I will be looking at the final chapters today. Chapter 18 is called The Answers That Mysteries Provide. This chapter is a celebration of literary genre known as mystery. Today, my friends, we each have one day less, every one of us, and joy is the only thing that slows down the clock. These words of wisdom, these lines, are from one of the books of John D. MacDonald. MacDonald was a prolific author of crime and suspense novels. For instance, he wrote the novel which the movie Cape Fear was based on. Nina's father loved his work, and so does Nina. And she has been moved by them and the entire genre. Sankovic writes, "A book does not have to be part of a canon of a great literature to make a difference in the reader's life." Nina claims that mysteries have something to say to all of us about the world and our efforts to make sense of our place in it. Growing up, everyone in Nina's family read mysteries, and each person had their own favorite author. Nina's favorite was Dick Francis. His novels often deal with crime in the horse racing world. Nina explains, "What drives my hunger for mysteries is the search for order." Okay, let's see. There are always bits of wisdom in a good mystery, but what Nina is looking for is solutions. Okay. She writes, "I'm searching for order in the universe, in a world where sometimes very little makes sense. A mystery can take the twists and turns in life and run them through a plot that eventually does make sense. A solution to a question is found. The sense of satisfaction is huge." The main character in a mystery by Bernard Schlink called Self's Murder is Gerhard Self, a private investigator. By the end of the novel, Self has solved the crime and covered the identity of the perpetrators and their corruption and deception that has led to a number of murders. But he's unable to prove what he knows, and the criminals don't get to pay for their crime. Self is crushed emotionally and mentally, but he comes to understand that his own sanity depends on accepting what he cannot change. He realizes that it is his decision whether to interpret the outcome as unjust and unsatisfactory and suffer as a consequence, or decide that this was a fitting end. Nina takes away the following lesson. We cannot control the events around us, but we are responsible for our reactions to those events. Nina recognizes that she's responsible for how she reacts to Anne-Marie's death. Nina writes, "Once past the initial shock of losing her and the period of grief that followed, I could choose how to respond. The fitting end is determined by how a person takes what life gives them, not by what life gives them." But what about what life takes away? How to live with the loss of someone close? How to live? That responsibility is wholly up to us as well. Mysteries tell us that there is order in the universe by connecting dots and coming up with a solution. But for some questions, there is no answer. There are mysteries that we will never understand. And order is sometimes found in accepting that not all questions can be answered. I wanted to add a little something here, and that's that in the name of difference, it's perfectly okay if you don't read mysteries. Our different backgrounds certainly bring us to different genres and different sensibilities. Frankly, reading about crimes and illegal activity really does not do it for me. Mass culture promotes these things because it promotes fear. They make us afraid, and they want us to seek protection and buy security products. I find mysteries to be often very boring and intellectually not challenging. Sometimes I give up in the middle because I don't care what happens. I like science, in particular physics, cosmology, geology, and also to a lesser extent biology and botany. I find order and connection in the universe, in the cosmos, the planets, the stars, and in nature, in earth, in animals, in plants, and also in rocks and stones, in fossils and crystals. I think that the story of the universe and the story of the earth are our stories. Next chapter is about kindness. It's called Discovering Purpose of Kindness. This chapter is on the power of kindness to connect us with each other, kindness as a way of creating meaning, and kindness as a form of self-therapy. Okay. Nina has a stepdaughter. It is her husband's daughter from a previous marriage. She is in her early 20s and living in London with her fiancé. Her name is Meredith. She calls her father one night, crying. Things are over with her boyfriend. Nina's husband asks Meredith to come to be with them. He mouths, "Is it okay?" to Nina, and she nods. Nina is welcoming. She writes, "What else could I do? How else to respond to despair? But with kindness and a place to live, safe and protected, to offer solace and comfort to a person who's sad and confused, and to be a witness to her grief and a companion through the hardship." Excuse me. In Unkindness by Adam Phillip and Barbara Taylor, the authors argue that human kindness is human nature. Phillip and Taylor believe that in lightening the burden of others, easing their fears and fostering their hope, we gain strength. And when that same kindness is given back to us, we flourish, and our own fears lessen, and our own hopes bluster. Nina is reading Better by John O'Brien. O'Brien is best known for Leaving Las Vegas, a book about a self-destructive alcoholic. Better is about characters seeking, also is also about characters seeking oblivion and release in alcohol. The main character is William. He's never fully present for anything. All is hazed and clouded by drinking. But he eventually steps out of it to save another person. This kindness in turn gives him a chance to restart his life and to move beyond apathy and into engagement. Meredith has lived with them before. She has a very good relationship with all four boys. Nina wants to do something special to show Meredith that she cared for her and cared about what happened to her. She takes her to the U.S. Open tennis tournament in Queens, and they have a very good time there. Kindness often bridges the divide between one person and another in various circumstances and situations. It is a positive and vigorous force. The acts of kindness are lines passed back and forth between people to form a web of safety. Sankovich writes, "There is no way to balance the scale of inequities, and I cannot find any persuasive explanation for why illness, death, and hardship are so inequitably distributed. But I do find that sympathy, compassion, and solicitude are an answer to the consequences of pain and sorrow." She adds, Even the most generous acts can never bring Anne Marie back to me. But each gentle act of caring relieves the weight of the battle, lightens my load, and offers strength of support. All right, the book is wrapping up. We're in chapter 20. The year of reading is coming to an end. A friend tells Nina, "You must be ready to just relax." But Nina is relaxed. She just had a year of pleasure. Other parts of her life were sometimes burdensome, but daily reading of books was always a joy. Excuse me. Nina was not sick even for one day during the entire project. She writes, "Bathed in pleasure, I was immune to illness." Sankovich again attacks the idea of low and high culture as it applies to books. She does not buy the idea that, quote, "books should be hard to read and that unless they're hard to read, they're not doing us any good," quote, close. Nina writes, "All the books that I was reading, the hard ones to work through and the easy ones to devour, were doing me good, lots of good." She just wants a good story, intriguing characters, and interesting backgrounds. She describes her choice of books in the following way: sobering works balanced with lighter-hearted volumes, mysteries tempered by coming-of-age novels, reflections on middle age and the end of life, harmonizing with literature for younger readers, gothic and noir countering memoir and exposition. She writes, "I read short stories, longer novels, personal narratives, and science fiction. I found pleasure in all of them." Books raised Nina's spirit and her sense of hope. She highlights the final words of a prologue in 30 Omirgar's Bombay Time. It reads, "A day, a single day, a silver urn of promise and hope, another chance at reinvention, at resurrection, at reincarnation, a day, the least and most of our lives." Nina turns to talking about books. She had always been a reader, but she had added a new practice to her routine, namely writing about books and talking about them to anyone who was open and interested. In sharing ideas and thoughts about what she was doing, she found a fundamental new satisfaction in books, namely talking about them. Of course, that's what we're doing here now. In 1989, In 1989, the New Republic publishes an article by a literary critic in which he claims critics don't care about what the common reader is up to. Nina responds to this piece by writing a letter which gets published. Nina wrote, "As a common reader, I don't care about what the literary critics were up to." Nina goes back to talking about books. She finds that she needs to talk about books because talking about books allows her to talk about anything to anyone. Stankovich writes, when we discuss what we're reading, what we're really discussing is our own lives, our take on everything from sorrow to fidelity and to responsibility, from money to religion, from worrying to inebriation, and from sex to laundry and back again. I beg to differ a little bit. I want to just quickly say something on behalf of classics and the difficult books. When we read books, we give our time to them. So it makes sense to reserve our time for better and best books, namely the classics, which pass the standard of quality, longevity, and influence. They're often teeming with bits and large chunks of wisdom and deep insight into human experience. But of course, which works should be considered as classics and why are always, to some extent, contentious issues and open questions. And then for philosophy books, they're always initially hard because they're introducing us to a new set of ideas and associated concerns and worries. But if we stick to them, they always teach us new things and broaden our horizons. The very last chapter, it's called Tolstoy on a Purple Couch, same as the book. Nina mainly references Tolstoy's novelette, Forged Coupon. The plot is about the twists and the turns one life takes and the impact that one person can make on the life of another. When a father refuses to lend his son, Mitya, the small sum of money that he needs to repay a loan because he's in a bad mood and had a bad day at work, he sets in progression a series of evil and immoral acts. His son forges a coupon of payment, this is like check fraud, and passes it to a shopkeeper to get the money he owes another. When the shopkeeper discovers that the coupon is fake, he passes it on to a passing peasant named Ivan for a load of wood. When the peasant uses it in a tavern, he's thrown in jail. When Ivan, the peasant, is released, he takes the shopkeeper to court. But the shopkeeper manages to bribe a servant to lie about the transaction and to make a false testimony. The peasant loses everything and becomes destitute. Ivan then turns to a life of crime. He steals horses. After his experience, the servant becomes convinced that people are completely evil and rascals. He becomes a thief, stealing from anyone and everyone. Stepan, the man who owned the horses, finds and kills Ivan with a stone. He goes to jail for a year and comes out penniless and homeless. Nina writes, one by one, the ripples of deceit and injustice spread, connecting previously unconnected lives in a course of greed, treachery, disillusionment, anger, and eventually murder. Then something happens. Something happens and the downward spiral of action and reaction is transformed and reversed, and a progression of goodness is set in motion. Stepan, the man who owned the horses, killed the peasant and now is out of prison and desperate, kills a kindly old lady. But she warns him, have mercy on your own soul. To destroy someone's soul, and even worse, your own? He knifes her anyway, but he's immediately affected and altered. Stepan suddenly feels so exhausted he cannot even walk. He lays down in the gutter and stays there for 2 days. When he gets up, he goes to the police station and turns himself in. In prison, he lives his life as a form of redemption for the evil things he has done. Stepan becomes very kind and a compassionate friend to all prisoners. Then we see that every good and generous act that is performed by a character is repaid in kind with an act of goodness toward another. And so goodness passes from one person to another and finally back to the son who forged the coupon, Mitya. Mitya meets Stepan and is transformed by his story. Mitya gives up shallow materialism and gambling and starts a family and dedicates himself to peasantry and helping others. He also eventually makes up with his estranged father. Nina only understands what Tolstoy is trying to say here at the end of her year of reading. When she first reads this book, she understands the message about how we're all connected and how one act sets off a chain of reaction of impacts and consequences. But now she realizes that Tolstoy was laying out an explanation for everything that has happened to her and setting forth the meaning of her life. Nina writes, "The events that I had experienced in my life set the contours of my life, but the meaning of my life is ultimately by how I respond to joys and sorrows of life, and how I extend help to others as they travel on their own winding road of existence." She then winds it down. "During my year-long respite filled with books, I recuperated. Even more, I learned how to move beyond recuperation to living. For 3 years, I had run as fast as I could, trying to live and love and learn at double speed to make up for what Anne Marie had lost, trying to anesthetize myself from what I've lost. I turned to books. I immersed myself in the world of authors, in the world the authors had created, and I witnessed new ways of handling the twists and turns of life, discovering tools of humor and empathy and connection. Through my reading, I reached the point of understanding so much. My sister is dead, but everything she did for me while she was alive is still going strong. I will anchor myself with her life and not with her death. Death took all choices away from her, but not from me, and I choose to live on with her besides me always, alive in all my memories of how she lived. She will continue to shape and direct me and advise me. I know that Anne Marie will always be with me and with everyone she loved. I understand the lasting impact that one life can have on another and another and another." All right. That was Tolstoy on Purple Chair. We have a few minutes. I wanted to talk a little bit about this program. We look closely at three books this summer: A Philosophy of Loneliness by Lars Svensson, The Philosopher and the Wolf, Lessons from the Wild on Love, Death, and Happiness by Mark Rowlands, and Tolstoy in Purple Chair, My Year of Magical Reading by Nina Sankwich. I like books and reviews, and you can find reviews of these books on the internet on YouTube, but they're not like what we're doing here. The reviews on YouTube are really performances, and they rarely go beyond the first chapter. And in the past, I have thought that I can do better, so eventually I thought I should contact the radio station and maybe give it a try. I don't like the YouTube as a vehicle because of like and subscribe, and because it's a for-profit organization. I also don't always agree with all the ideas that I present, but they're intelligent books and they have insights, are in no way offensive, so I let them, for the most part, speak for themselves, and I try to produce a faithful summary. In the analytic tradition of philosophy, the first step in argument analysis is paraphrasing the view under discussion clearly and precisely. I'm doing that with the summary in order to present and share the useful and intelligent ideas with the listening audience. It was also my aim to produce a thoughtful show for a bright audience. When one watches the nightly news, what one sees very often is the anchor reading some headline, then he passes it to a reporter in the field who repeats the same thing verbatim, and the reporter then talks to someone on the ground who basically repeats the same thing all over again. In other words, the news treats its audience as if they were simple-minded. So I wanted to make a show that is food for thought and has respect for the intelligence of its audience. All right? Next week, this show, Books and Ideas, is moving from 9 to 9:30 a.m. spot on Fridays to 4:30 to 5 p.m. spot with the beginning of the fall quarter. So I invite you to join us. And let's see. Here, I got some music for you.
Listen up, beat, yeah. Boy, was it neat, yeah. Not just knee deep, she was totally deep when she did the freak with me.
Never missing a beat, yeah. Boy, was it neat, yeah.
The girl's a freak, the girl never misses a beat, yeah, yeah.
Not just knee deep, she was totally deep when she did the freak with me.
It didn't work, no.
It wasn't fucking no more.
Fire! hoy me he despertado con mucha tristeza, sabiendo que mañana ya te vas de mí. Te juro mi vida que pensando en lo nuestro me pasé la noche casi sin dormir. Ya lo sé que tú te vas, que quizás no volverás, que muy triste soy será mis mañanas si te vas. ¿Hasta cuándo volverás? A mis brazos no lo sé, será una eternidad. Creo que te voy a perder, ya lo sé, mi amor, que te vas, te vas. Adiós, amor. Adiós, amor. Adiós, amor. Adiós, amor, adiós, amor, adiós.